Hey guys, how you doing? Welcome to the 30 Plus Men's Fitness Podcast. This is episode 17, and this is your host, Coach Treggs, founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness. First off, I want to say to you guys, as always, thanks for the wonderful feedback on the recent podcast. I had Phil Graham, who's recently written a book for diabetics, and the feedback was incredible. He also dropped some real knowledge bombs. A couple of his quotes actually made me, just a few of those quotes, made me go and actually rewrite part of my 6-week transformation online manual because it resonated with me so much. And I've actually included some of those comments in my emails, and it seems to have resonated with my clients too. And this is what I always say, guys, right? It's the same for me when I go to courses. I'll go to courses, I hear a lot of stuff, I know it. But if I can grab a couple of nuggets from that and take that away and that adds value to my life, then that's what I'm looking for. And that's what I want with you guys, right? I'm going to get a multitude of different trainers on. And if you can just pick up one or two nuggets and you can go away, you can plug that in and that helps you with your fat loss and fitness goals, then I'm happy. All right, guys, so look, we're going to get into this. I am sat in my office in a rainy Sully just outside of Cardiff. I've just come back from a week skiing in Germany with the kids and the missus, which was fantastic. Very challenging with two young boys, but I wouldn't change it. So I've had a week on the slopes, drinking beer in the sunshine, which has been great. But now I'm back to reality and I'm sat in my office with the sparkling water. But I'm sat actually with a guy virtually because he's in Spain, I believe. He's in the sunshine today and I'm in the wet and cold. I am sat here with Simon Hall, from Body Composition Coaching. How are you, Simon?
I'm good. I'm honoured to be here. However, I'm going to admit from the word go that I do feel like a bit of a fraud for being on this podcast, given that I'm not 30.
Don't be silly, mate.
I'm excited.
No, I know you're almost 30, aren't you, really? But guys, for those of you that don't know Simon, he seems to have really exploded in the last year. I've seen a lot of his stuff on Facebook. He runs a business called Body Composition Coaching, which we're going to get into and talk about where it all sort of began. But first off, Simon, what are you doing in Spain?
Well, I've flown myself out here, really. I jumped in at the deep end and I booked myself to do a charity cycle. So essentially what we plan to do, I really should have looked into this more. That's the main lesson learned here. So we've booked to do 260 miles to get from Buckingham Palace to the Eiffel Tower. Now, the mission is we're trying to get it in under 20 hours. But me being me, I didn't look into this before we actually created the event, and I thought it'd be a lot easier than what it was. So having trained for 6 weeks on a spin bike, thinking it was relatively easy, then got hit in the face with the harsh reality that it's a lot harder actually on a road bike.
Right.
So last week I went out on a cycle with our resident endurance coach.
Yeah.
And what happened was I was hit in the face with the old, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to fail, which I have not felt for a long time.
Right.
So with a drastic goal creates drastic action. So I shipped myself off to Spain to jump on with a couple of the teams over here and do an intensive week of cycling.
Amazing. So, yeah. Amazing. Do well, even more appreciative of you taking your time out, buddy, to talk to me. Okay, look, let's start from the beginning, buddy. For you know, like I said to you just before we started recording, my niche is busy over 30s men, with a lot of men in their 40s and 50s, regular guys. They like a couple of pints on the weekend. They might have their head in fitness, or they might not. They might just have found us and started listening to our podcast. So I want you to introduce yourself, like I said to you. Tell us all about your business, all right? You're not competition. There's more than enough to go around. Tell us all about Simon Hall, your business, and where did it all begin, your journey with health and fitness, Simon?
Oh, here we go. So this is a fun topic. It all started with me. I was actually a high-level gymnast. So I got into competing from a very young age. I actually competed from the age of, I think it was like 6 upwards. So I was in the sport for 14 years where I hit a high level. However, I ended up going to college, university as you do, and discovering that there's other things out there such as women and alcohol.
Sounds like my story,
which massively distracted me from gymnastics. However, it wasn't the road that I wanted to go down and move towards.
Sure.
So from that, what actually happened was there was a family loss. So I actually, we watched our grandfather passed away from something that could have been helped through lifestyle and nutrition.
Right.
And this is what's kind of made me realize that there's more to this. So what I then did was became a bit of a hermit and just studied everything around nutrition, health, lifestyle, and everything that could have possibly help him.
Yeah,
and
it kind
of set me on this path to become, to help more people, really.
Right.
So ever from that path then, I became a personal trainer. I went down the whole personal trainer route, and it still wasn't enough. I didn't feel like I was helping or having the impact on the amount of people that I wanted to. And this is what kind of led to body composition. So initially, body composition just started off me as myself, and we turned it into an online platform, delivering education, nutrition, and things along the lines of that. And then I realized that to have more of an impact that I wanted to have, I couldn't take this on my own. So I had to get experts in every field. So now I stand shoulder to shoulder with an array of experts who help in every single area, from endurance to health to mindset to business to wealth, you name it.
Wow.
So we've just kind of embodied the entire coaching space with a coach in every area.
Sure.
So now not only are we helping people with the health, it's pretty much every area of life. And I'm sure you'll know yourself, one permission slip to change one thing is usually a permission slip to change plenty of others.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you actually qualify to become a PT, Simon?
I actually qualified at the age of 18. So we're now, it's 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah. So 28 years old. So who did you qualify with out of the time, just out of interest? Because there are guys that will listen to this who will have a little bit of an interest in a career change. I was 27 when I did my course, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah. At the time, it was with a company called Focus.
Right.
So it was the first initial step on the ladder, but I'm not 100% sure whether they're still going.
Right.
But having done a lot of work with people who are coming up through the industry and mentoring trainers and whatnot to come through into the industry, it seems that Premier are a really, really good company to go with.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk, you know, you've been in the industry 12 years. I'm in my 10th year now. I've been asking a lot of this lately to coaches because I've been saying a lot in my emails lately to my clients, look, I'm not changing my stance on certain things, but I am evolving. And Paul Mort once said to me, you only know what you know, right? So there was stuff I was teaching 5 years ago, which I thought was the best way, right? Maybe it wasn't. Was it still getting clients' results? Yes. Is there a way that I can coach, give options for different paths for people to go down with nutrition now? Yes. Does that mean what I was teaching 5 years ago was wrong? No. Does it mean I can give more up-to-date and current information in order to give my clients a better journey, a better experience? Well, yes, it does. So let's be totally honest here, right? Because more and more coaches are coming out and talking about their evolving industry. How have you evolved from when you first started off doing your first ever PT session to now?
This is quite, this is a broad topic for me. Now, believe it or not, I actually, like I was saying before, when I first got into the industry, I just studied everything from nutrition, the methodology and all that sort of stuff. But for me personally, I didn't have the confidence to deliver it. And the person you probably see now wasn't the person who was there 10 years ago. Now, it's only once I went through my own personal journey and I hit rock bottom myself, and I went on this journey of kind of like building myself back up and actually finding
and
connecting.
We want to talk about that, okay? But not now. Just remember that, okay? Go on.
Yeah,
sorry. No, we'll talk about when you sort of hit the rock bottom. Sorry to jump in, mate. Carry on.
No worries. But yeah, it was kind of from my own growth there and realizing that it wasn't kind of me, that I kind of did a lot of work on myself. And it was only until I kind of came up through that angle did I realize that I was actually serving people better.
Right.
People resonated more, and they actually, because they'd seen through my own personal experience that I'd been through a lot of issues that most people do.
Right. Okay. So You mentioned there, this is slightly off topic, but you mentioned sort of hitting rock bottom. I've spoke about in the past, I suffered from anxiety and depression in my late 20s. And there's a lot of guys in our system that have, in fact, my business partner, Mark, who I actually set up the business with, he took his own life, unfortunately, just as we were getting things going with 30 Plus Men's Fitness. And he really suffered a lot with depression. And there's a lot of guys that are coming into my group, especially in the global community, that are opening up and saying, you know, I'm struggling. I think most guys that are sort of our age are gonna have some sort of story to tell. It wouldn't be an easy life. So do you mind opening up a little bit about, you said the hit rock bottom? What happened, buddy?
Okay, so mine actually started with an array of things, really. So obviously in the industry, I was doing things, I wasn't necessarily doing things myself, and I lost complete track of my path, who I was, and stuff along the lines of that. So I started going down the whole route of, I presume it's like people pleasing. Do you know when you just come completely away from things and you're kind of looking for acceptance from other people? So it kind of dragged me into the whole like getting fit, getting lean, doing the whole photo shoot things. And it just wasn't me. I lost the entire enjoyment in everything. Right. And then what actually happened was, I presume you start, other areas of your life start to get affected with it. So obviously relationships, family and stuff along the lines of that just started to get hit with the same brush, really. And it's only until I hit a point where kind of like everything, just the relationships ended and all that, I was like, I'm not being authentic. I'm not actually being myself here, and I'm not living by my own rules.
Right.
So it was from that moment that I decided that this is the reasons that I'm depressed. I made myself aware. And from that, I just changed absolutely everything that I did.
Right.
So
what did you change? What was the primary thing that you changed?
I made myself, because when I was in the point where I was down at that lowest low, there was a lot of resistance in daily actions.
Right.
I made myself very aware of everything. So I started journaling. I was like, this makes me feel like this. This is the emotion. Because at the end of the day, it's environment dictates thought. Thought dictates emotion. Emotion dictates state. Yeah. State dictates action. Action creates goal. So I just made myself really aware and hyper aware of everything from the word go. So I was going through all my daily actions, my daily to-dos. And it was a simple case of just making sure that everything that was going on in on my day, yep, it was for me. Yep. It was things that didn't have resistance. It were things that were going to move me forwards and grow me. And that's what I found in the majority of people that we coach in, is right, that they're not really in line with their own stuff, or right, they're not really connected with themselves. And that's where it really comes from.
So tell me a little bit more about how you coach people. You call yourself a body composition coach. Like, where does that come from? What is that about?
So the word body composition is where it all started initially. And we're actually looking at possibly renaming or rebranding there, because of what we've become now is so much more.
Right.
So I presume it's kind of evolved with me. At the time, it was all about getting the six pack and then kind of realizing I'm not actually happy once I've got that.
Yeah.
Because happiness isn't what you see in the mirror. No, it actually comes from deep within.
Right.
So now we've realized this. It's kind of a case of embodying everything that way.
Right.
Instead of just doing everything from the external.
Right. So what kind of people are you working with, for example? And how many people are working for you, and what sort of people come to you? Are they athletes? Are they general public? Who are these people?
Now, this is the main thing. So we've got an array, because each different coach has a different skill to bring to the table. We right, attract a whole host of different clients.
Yeah.
For me personally, I work more with a business person. So right, again, someone who else has put himself on the shelf and has let life kind of yep, go away with them.
Yep.
We coach athletes, depending on what field. So we've got performance and endurance. We train the average Joe, your average Janes.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything we've got.
So you work with a lot of business guys. I do as well. Okay. What do you think are the sort of biggest aspects that they're struggling with when they come to you? What is it with these guys?
The biggest aspects I've found is they're not really on track. Like, they let the business run away with them and they just kind of become immersed in it. And like I used that quote before, they put themselves on the shelf. Now, usually when you look at the behaviors that entails, it's usually like sedation.
Right,
so it
yeah,
could evolve in drink or foods, and they're just not really addressing what the actual issue is, but they're sedating away from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's usually what I find is the biggest thing in business types.
Right, okay. And so how often do you normally work with a client generally online? And how long do you think you need with them to create long-lasting change? What are the steps you take?
Anything we do is pretty much bespoke to, like, bespoke to the client. Yeah. So whatever they need, we'll work with them as much as they need us.
Sure.
So realistically, it depends. Everyone grows at different rates and everyone gets things at their own pace.
Yeah.
So for us, it's just about creating that. But literally the bottom base is what I find is, if you just get people really in tune with yeah, why they're doing it, who they actually are, what's the purpose, what's the values,
yeah,
everything else just grows upwards.
And what,
so for us, if we just get that first month, 6 weeks, perfect, everything else just...
So what you mentioned there about getting the first month to 6 weeks perfect.
Yeah.
What would that look like? Okay, for the guys listening to this that are wanting to make some changes.
It's being brutally honest with yourself, it's looking at what you're doing, every single area of your life, and asking yourself the question of, am I happy? Is this sustainable? Is this where I want to be when I look back at my life? Mm. And then again, just being brutally honest and going, if it's a no, can that be addressed? Can that be worked around? And then essentially just remapping everything and restructuring it to a point where they can grow their habits, their actions into something that actually serves them. It's because at the end of the day, it's one of those, if there's resistance there, you're not honouring yourself, are you?
Sure. So it's kind of working out whatever it is. In terms of the nutritional side of things, what are the kind of first changes that you would get, like an overweight sort of business guy coming to you? He's feeling like shit. He's got no energy. Business is good, but he's not sleeping very well. He's probably drinking too much. What are the first things that you go about changing, and how do you do that, especially with online? I mean, I do online coaching, so I've got some clients that just get it, and they just go with it. They're like machines. They don't even need a phone call. They're like, no, we'll catch up again. Whereas some, they need that babysitting. It's really difficult. So, yeah.
Yeah, everyone's different. Everyone needs different strategies and different methods to move forward. The majority of the time, we actually get the client to tell us. So it's like, what do you feel? What do you feel confident in yourself doing this week? Is it just a case where water could be the only thing that you could change? Let's move forward there.
Sure.
So it's just the little drop of habit repeated daily just moves them forwards quicker. But I fully get you there. There are those people and there are those types that you can just go do this and it's immediately done.
Sure.
The biggest thing I found is getting the pace right. And this is where I found a lot of people really struggle in the coaching industry, is the pace doesn't match the client, what the client can actually do.
Right.
So for us, it's a big thing to get the client to take a 30,000 foot square look overview of what they can currently commit to.
Yeah.
Get their expectation to meet that, and then going in with a plan. This is what we can follow. This is what you'll be able to do. Because if it becomes stressful, or if they change too much too quick, they'll just disconnect.
Yeah.
So for us, it's all about how do we get them to constantly win. And then if we can build that habit of constantly winning, their motivation's through the roof, the progress is through the roof, they're raving and singing about us.
So sure.
It's just a win for everyone.
So in terms of adherence, what sort of tactics are you using to get these clients to adhere? I mean, because I've started to talk a lot about gamification now with a lot of, like, Jamie Alderton and Phil Graham talking about, you know, the Fitbits and the daily challenges, making it more fun. So clients are adhering, they're doing their stuff, they don't even realize they are, because it's like a bloody game. So what sort of steps do you take to get online clients to adhere? Because it is challenging, right, when you don't work with people in person.
Yeah, we've got a support team. So right. Our support team will reach out and make and ensure that they're doing things on the daily and just hold them accountable to what it is that they're doing. So our accountability and support network take care of that. We've got Facebook groups, which obviously people just post in, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've been up.
Yep.
So essentially we've got three main post topics there.
Yep.
So we have what's called your weekly win. So getting people to post a weekly win. I fully agree with Graham and Jamie there with the Fitbits and stuff along the lines of that. Having something that on your arm that tells you when you're doing things right is massively rewarding. I actually went and invested in one the other week.
Yeah.
It's the best. I highly recommend them. I think.
Yeah, dude, mate, I'm one over. It's the best 108 quid I spent, mate. You know.
Exactly.
You've got one. You've got Fitbit Charge.
Yeah, I got the Blaze, but it's I actually realised how I was massively under eating.
Really?
So even though you can massively go, it might not look that way from my Instagram stories, but because I was doing so much training and stuff on the lines of that, I had everything mapped out and formulated. I was like, this is right. And when it actually was on my arm and it was calculating steps, heart rate and everything, and it had the actual figure, I was like, wow, I'm way under here.
Yeah.
So I genuinely believe that the technology that's catching up is making life
definitely
a hell of a lot
easier. Definitely
is.
In fact, we're launching a new 6-week plan tomorrow, time I get this podcast out. And what I'm actually doing for the first time ever, Simon, is I'm giving an option, because this is a generic plan. It's not bespoke. I do my bespoke coaching separately, but I'm actually giving people an option to track, and I'm encouraging them, if they can afford it, to go out and invest in a Fitbit. What I have found is I got my partner one for Christmas, and I thought, right, I'll see what her reaction is, because everyone was raving about it. She loved it, right? Now, it would be like 7-8 o'clock at night, and I was like bathing the kids, and she's like, I'm just going for a walk around the yard. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I've only done 5,000 steps today. So she's marching around the yard trying to get 10,000. Now, people say, oh, that's silly or whatever, but that's not. It's making people actively aware. You are not moving enough. You've got to move more. So I went and got one. And I was just hooked. As soon as I got it on my wrist and I'm tracking my sleep, which I'm addicted to sleep. I didn't get any for 3 years, but I do now. I'm addicted to it. And actually, the great thing about the Fitbits is that, you know, if I've got a busy coaching day, if I'm in the gym doing my one-to-one coaching and I do 8 hours of coaching and I'm up and downstairs and I'm always on my feet, I never stop, then my output that day is going to be so much greater than if I was just sat traveling. So recently I went up to see my business partners. I sat on a train all day. I had a few drinks at lunchtime. I got back in the evening. I thought, I've barely moved. I've done like 3,000 steps. No, I've run out of calories as well. Do you know what I mean? And that's what it does. It's because I can almost say, right, I can have that much for dinner tonight because I've moved that much. Or if you want to go and have that for dinner, or you want to go out for a glass of wine and a nice meal with your partner, well, then go and do 10,000 steps at lunchtime or after work. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. I think as well, it's a wonderful gadget for the fact it makes you focus on winning, and yeah. Especially if you can focus on those little areas. It might only seem little, such as steps and sleep and stuff along the lines of that, but just from focusing on those little things make the rest of the process yeah. a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah. You'd be in our global group now. We've got about 9,300 guys, and there's a
That's
lot
incredible.
Of those. Yeah, thanks, buddy. There's a lot of those guys that that will, and including me, post their sleep every morning, and a lot of guys go, shit, you sleep bad. Or there's another guy's like, wow, are you dead? Were you dead when you were asleep then? Because it's just no restlessness. But, you know, it fascinates me because, you know, I often wake up for the toilet once in a night, or my son will disturb me, and I'll get up and then I'll go back to sleep. And it gets that. It tracks the time I was awake. I'm like, this blows my mind, this technology. And it tracks the time I lay awake thinking and then went back to sleep. And as well, there was a couple of guys in one of my programs saying, oh, I'm not too happy about this Fitbit because, you know, I'd woken up and I'd already burnt 600 calories. And I'm like, yeah, that's because, you know, you're expending calories in your sleep. You're a living and breathing organism, to say that carefully, you know, so you have already burnt maybe 600 calories by the time you've got up. And again, it's making people aware. Yes, you know, you've got a basal metabolic rate. You know, these are guys that are coming into my clients that maybe don't understand. Yeah, you've got a base metabolic rate. You're going to burn 1,800 calories just sat there, you know. So you can add in food. And then if you want to eat a little bit more, you can increase your output.
Yeah. At the end of the day, awareness is everything, isn't it? The more people are aware, the more they're going to act.
Yep.
And you're right in what you're saying as well. We've noticed when people go out for nights out and stuff along the lines of that, it's actually helped them there as well. So when people are going to indulge, they'll either A, take the step count up, or they can actually put it and go, do you know what? I've actually not done that bad, considering.
Absolutely. And I mean, it goes back to the whole, I don't know what your approach is, but, you know, I work with all over 30s guys. These guys like a beer. Some of them like too many. And I know I'm not going to change that. In fact, it was kind of like I had this whole realization about 2 or 3 years ago that I'm not going to change these guys, but I can change them to a point, and all I can do is advise. And then, you know, when you've got things like this, it does make you that little bit more accountable. And I was saying to a client recently on one of our retreats, and he was like, he was talking about how he feels like he's on the wagon or off the wagon, this and that. And I said, look, don't look at going out on a Saturday night like having a cheat meal. Just think you're going to go out, and I got this great from Phil Learney, and having a higher calorie meal. It's not right or it's not wrong. It's a higher calorie meal. So if you want to go out for an evening meal with your wife, you might have a couple of glasses of wine. Okay, it's not optimal, but then I always say, what is optimal for a busy over 30s man who's not about to compete in a competition or as an athlete, right? So why don't you just go a little bit lower on the calories in the day, maybe skip breakfast, maybe do 10 to 15,000 steps, and then guess what? You can go out and really enjoy yourself in the evening completely guilt-free, knowing you might even still be in a deficit. Do you know what I mean?
I'm a big sayer, and I always say this, and again, the Instagram stories with the Cocoa Pops kind of...
Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Everyone labels foods. Everyone labels foods now. It's either a good food or a bad food. And just that one thing, when you think about it, is just such a bad mindset around food. Because as soon as you say something is a bad food and you consume it, you're automatically hit with feelings of guilt, shame, and you feel like you failed. Well, so you're automatically pushing yourself away.
It's absolutely right. And I've actually been talking about this in my recent emails because I've had a revelation since getting this. And also, I'm quite open about it. I had probably nothing major, but I've probably had issues with food ever since I was about 8 or 9 years old. And I only realized this when I went to have some CBT in 2015. So basically, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I was always outside playing football with my mates, etc., etc. Very, very active. And then we moved to a different part of town. It was only 5 miles away, but at the age of 9, you know, it's too far to ride your bike and play with your mates every night. So I was lonely. I started playing on my Atari or whatever it was at the time and just started eating crisps because I was lonely. And I'd eat 5 or 6 packs and then I'd feel guilty. And then I'd do it again the following day. I was like, right, I'm going to have to start doing something Monday. But this sort of went with me through my life. But then I had it under control when I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s. I'd been in the industry 4 years. I was a clean eater. And it was really easy for me because I lived on my own. I had no temptation. I was like a robot. I would just nip into Tesco's every night, get turkey and broccoli, go home, cook it up in my coconut oil. I'd have water in the fridge. That would be it. And then same again the following night. And I was 12 and a half stone. I was like a whippet. You know, I was running half marathons in 1 hour 25. And it was great because I had no stress. I had no VAT, no staff, no kids, no missus, right? And then all that shit come along. Not shit. But then it all came along and it's amazing. It changed my life. But then all of a sudden I woke up and I was in a big house. I was VAT registered. I had staff. I was a sole provider and I wasn't sleeping. And I was trying to eat clean all the time. I'm failing like by Tuesday at midday because I just couldn't, you know, my body was swimming in cortisol. My ghrelin was high. Guys, ghrelin is a hunger hormone. We've already discussed this that you release when you get poor sleep. And I couldn't cope. And I would just start clean, 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 and then fail. Start clean, 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 then fail. And it got to the point where I was so exhausted from the kids and trying to eat better, trying to restrict, that it was just getting worse and worse. And I was having like 6 or 7 bags of crisps on a Saturday night. And then the guilt, then you wake up feeling like shit. Yeah. And then when I went to see this CBT guy, it's like brutally honest and spoke openly about it. And the first thing he said to me, Simon, was he said, you can't restrict any food groups. I said, what do you mean? He said, nope, you can't restrict crisps. You can't restrict chocolate. You have to eat those foods, but you have to eat them in moderation. Of course, moderation, like nobody wants to hear moderation. And like Phil Learney said to me recently, moderation is the thing, but it's boring. Like people don't want to hear it. Over time, and with this, the whole gamification now with the Fitbit where you can track, it was like a revelation to me. And I said this in an email recently, like these days I could go and have a bag of crisps and it's like, yeah, that's fine. Okay, I enjoyed that bag of crisps. Oh, my sons want some chocolate. I'll have a whole nut. Great. That whole nut was 250 calories. It might not be optimal. It might give me an insulin spike, but I certainly ain't going to now go and have 7 bags of crisps and some biscuits and 4 cans because I've broken my diet.
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
I mean, how good are Dairy Milk nuts though? Seriously.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm a big... It's one of those, really. I always think if you know your numbers, there are no good or bad foods.
Yeah.
And as long as you keep your nutrition as simple as that, I just think it makes the whole mindset around it a hell of a lot easier for people.
Yeah.
But I have to, I fully agree with what you said. People don't like moderation. People want to be told a strict plan or given something to adhere to.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it becomes kind of a bit of a disordered eating.
Yeah.
Way,
no, 100%. And this is, and look, you know, this is completely open conversation now. How many thousands of people listen to this is, you know, like I said to you, you only know what you know. And at the time, you know, I'd done courses maybe 6, 7 years ago where they're like, you can't eat that because it's got additives, it's got preservatives, and they're toxins. And you don't want toxins because toxins make you fat. And, you know, you're paying a lot of money for these courses and then you're coming away and you're teaching it to your clients. And you're like, actually looking back... you know, and then you're seeing guys in my programs that are either on or off the wagon, on or off. One guy recently, good friend of mine, Alex Coombs over in Canada, he listens to these. He was an online client of mine. He popped up recently and he said, guys, I'm on the 6-week plan. I'm doing really well. It's the Super Bowl tonight. And it's tradition over here that we have a couple of Budweisers. Now, I'm thinking of doing them, but then I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to be ultra clean tomorrow. And I said, dude, go on to MyFitnessPal, type in Budweiser, but 211 calories. I said, enjoy 3 or 4. And just basically, if you end up in a surplus because you've had some nachos as well, the next day you can throw in a mini fast or you just cut back on your calories or just increase your steps. And I'm like, boom.
What's that analogy? Is it analogy or an anagram or what you call it? It's KISS, keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid, yeah.
Just keep it all simple and it's the way that everything moves.
I think the thing is that like what we're obviously talking about now is deemed as the whole flexible approach to dieting. And I think that unfortunately it's come about from the if it fits your macros crowd. And if you go on Instagram, you've got like ripped coaches like shoving loads of pizza down their neck. And I think we've got to get it across to people. Look, that is not the case. Like I say this to my clients, eat whole foods 90% of the time. You know what you've got to do, stay hydrated, sleep well, eat protein, move, get your green veggies. But actually, understand that if you have a spoonful of honey, you're not going to have some mad, you know, you're not going to all of a sudden go into fat storing mode. But I used to believe things like that for years, and we do evolve as clients and as coaches. And I'm seeing coaches out there now on Facebook that, you know, they're promoting macros and all that. And but 5-6 years ago, they were doing paleo. So
I was one of those. I'll happily hold my hands up.
Tell me, talk to me more. Talk to me more about that, buddy.
So for me, it was kind of one of those. The more I learned, the dumber I got to the client.
Brilliant.
That makes sense.
Go on.
So the more I put myself on these courses and took in more information and believed that this was the correct way, the dumber I was and the harder I found it to coach my clients. Now, when I actually step back into the real world and put myself in a client's point of view, it made things a hell of a lot easier. It's just simplicity.
Yeah.
And then getting the clients to kind of make it easy for themselves. And that's what creates that consistency. And that's what, there is no on and off switch.
Yeah.
And it's like you were saying before with your client over in the States, there's always a battle plan. If you go over, simply just do more the next day.
Yeah.
And you're still moving forwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I've recently in my six week plan, which launches tomorrow, we used to have a cheat meal, and I've taken them out now because I'm giving people an option to have a more flexible approach. Because what I was concerned about is then people have a cheat meal, they end up binging, they end up feeling shit the next day, and then they might end up sort of craving that junk. And then eating a little bit more crap, and then it's like, oh, it's fucked now. Do you know what I mean? Start again. And it is that sort of disordered kind of way, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
Jamie Olferson did a fantastic post on this the other day, or a video or something along the lines of that, about how labeling a cheat meal is really, really poor, because it just sets it up in your mindset already that you're cheating on what you're doing. So as soon as you hear that word, it's like, oh, I'm cheating on my plan.
Yeah.
Which then makes you feel... like, you know what I mean? You don't deserve it.
Yeah. Well, this is the interesting thing. And again, it is, you know, it's all down to your mindset. So it's like I say to people, look, you can follow this road. If you can be an ultra clean eater, then that is fucking amazing. Because I used to be that guy, and it was easy for me as a single guy with no stresses, no kids, no, you know, external stresses on me, right? And if you can do that, then that's great. But some people... And I remember Paul Mort recently saying this on Jamie Alderton's podcast. He said the more and more he failed, the more extreme his next plan was be, you know? So, and I've been there, right? You sat down on a Sunday night, you're going to go, right, I'm going to go no carbs for a week. It's just going to be, I'm not going to have any fruit. It's just going to be fats and protein and greens. And then you get into it and you're like, fucking hell, this is brutal. But the thing is that, there are many people listening to this podcast now that will have that way of thinking. And now this is my task now to set about trying to change that. I was talking to a client of mine, actually a female client, one of my original female clients recently. And she said she has started things on a Monday, but failed by Monday night, but then can't start again until the following Monday. Isn't that bad? It's bad, isn't it? But
it's strange though, that's the mindset I've found a lot of people are in, is it has to start on this day. It's perceived as a perfect day to start something.
Yeah.
But there's no time like the present, you know?
Exactly. So Fresh Start Monday, I think a lot of girls call it in one of my plans, FSM, I mean, Fresh Start Monday.
Whilst we're on this topic as well, there's something, we put a big story out on Instagram the other day and it got so much traction, and it was on about like, how at the minute we've got the most education, we've got the most coaches, we've got the most content readily available all over the world on the internet on nutrition. But yet everyone's the most confused they've ever been.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's just that much out there that people are just becoming paralyzed by analysis.
People are just
stuck and they just don't know what to do. So it's like, how do we simplify everything so that people just know what to get in or know what they should be eating?
Go on.
Go on.
No, you go on, buddy. Go on.
I was just saying, for me, it just seems like it's it's just been made, something that's quite a relatively simple topic has just been blown out of proportion, and everyone's getting all this science thrown at them, and it's not just like, do you know what, just eat this and move a bit more, it'll be fine.
But the thing is that, you know, if you would have said eat less, move more 5 years ago, I remember going on a course, and it was a fat loss course.
And I'd love to have a guess at these courses.
They said, well, it's not as simple as eat less and move more, because there's all these other things like, you know, toxins and this and that. And it's very confusing. And, you know, I remember years ago, I was working out of a CrossFit gym, and it was like, if you didn't do CrossFit and paleo, then you're a douchebag. Like, basically, you have to do CrossFit and paleo. And I was CrossFit and paleo, and I loved it. And it worked well for me at that time. But, you know, if you take carbs away from me today, no, I'm not going to be happy. So tell me about your experiences. You were a paleo guy, were you?
Yeah, it sounds like we've had a very similar past, to be honest.
Most coaches have.
I mean, do you know this memories thing that keeps popping up on Facebook?
Oh, dude.
Oh, I see some of the stuff that has been posted. I'm like, I can't believe I used to, I thought that was the be all and end all.
Yeah.
I'm just like... Well, at the end of the day, it makes you the person who you are today.
And I think this is great. It's being able to admit that, because I looked back at some stuff, and I'm like, especially before kids, where I thought I had it all worked out, and then you see my status update slowly change. But yeah, I used to call like my 28 or 35 day plans a detox, and I cringe at that now. I cringe at that. I absolutely, not because I was selling potions, it was a healthy eating plan, but I called it a detox. It was no real difference to what I do now. Encourage people to eat real foods, but it was a detox. And, you know, some of the clients still say, when's the next detox? And I'm like, it's not a detox, please. I'm sorry, it's not a detox. Do you know what I mean?
Speaking through your teeth.
Yeah, yeah. But it is right, isn't it? If most coaches that have probably been in our time... I spoke to Phil Learney recently. I didn't record it. I felt like a complete douchebag, and I'm waiting on us to do it again. But he said to me that he looks back at stuff from 10 years ago that he wrote, and it's almost like, you know, when you go to like your mum and dad's and you pull out old books from your school from the attic,
yeah.
And you're like, I didn't write that. I didn't draw that picture. And it was you, but it's just how you've evolved.
We put a post up on Facebook the other day about this, and it was about constantly reinventing yourself.
Yep.
But it's only from this that you become a better coach, isn't it?
Yeah,
so you've just got to constantly reinvent yourself. I mean, we found particularly that the main revelation for us has been really getting people into the mindset of working out why people do what they do.
Yeah.
And as soon as we've got that clicked, everything else is fine. It stops all this labeling of foods. It stops being on or off. So for us, that was the biggest thing for us as a coaching platform, was to really get to the deep down stuff. And then build up off the back of that.
So it seems like now with the nutrition, everybody is going down the road of tracking. I just put in the manual, just finished writing it before speaking to you, saying to the guys that wanted to go down the road of tracking, look, I don't actually scan all barcodes and use my fitness power. Most foods that you pick up now have got the calories on them. I use my calculator on my phone, just add up a bit. I can keep an eye on what my expenditure is with my Fitbit. I know what training I'm doing, if I'm going for a walk or a run or et cetera, et cetera. And I've sort of said to them, look, protein intake and creating a deficit of maybe 500 a day, anything more is going to be a little bit, you know, whatever you can handle, you know. So if you're going to go in 1,000 calorie a day deficit, as long as you can handle that, okay, you're on for £2 a week if you're looking at law of thermodynamics. But for people that come to you that wouldn't want to actively track, what do you suggest?
If you don't want to actively track, pretty much we just do it from portions.
Sure.
Get the not necessarily tracking the foods as they're eating them, but actually make a diary of them.
Yeah.
And then we can just look at it and go, at the end of the day, you got results from doing this. So what we'll do is we'll aim for the similar amount of food this time.
Yeah.
And just do it from that way. That's the easiest way we've done it. The other easiest way we've done is, I presume it's similar to yourself, just aim for these numbers.
Yeah.
Through the day, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
If you know your numbers, you're moving forwards. It's as simple as that.
Are you getting people to? Are you encouraging the use of like a Fitbit or a Garmin or iWatch to track their steps?
I am now. I was actually going to step in before. Yeah, Fitbit have actually started doing affiliations. I'll send you a link.
What?
So we're actually setting up an affiliation now where our clients can get this.
Dude,
so as soon as they sign up, that's...
Send me the details, because I'll tell you what, and I'm not just saying, I wish I'd had shares in Fitbit, because when I started to talk about this online, people are just posting in the groups every day that they bought one.
I think it goes back again, though, to the massive information. Like, people are being told calorie counting's for Nazis. I can remember someone said that to me. I was like, really?
Yeah,
I was like, you need to know this. It's like the most important thing. But I think it's just slowly but surely it's all being ironed out.
Yeah,
it's just getting a little bit easier.
Listen, dude, right? I was, when I seen all this, you know, tracking, all this coming out, I was like, no, you know, the whole not all calories are created equal, and we know that certain, you know, certain foods are going to give you a different hormonal reaction and you know, do different things to your neurotransmitters, etc. But let's control what we can control. And I remember Morty saying, because he's saying he was failing all these really super clean eating diets, and then somebody was encouraging him to track, and he went, "What fucking Weight Watchers, Slimming World? Are you taking the piss?" Do you know what I mean? But then he realised that if he could track, he could maybe have a bag of crisps a day. He could eat Haribos. Obviously, eating real food 90% of the time, but he could have those things guilt free.
Yeah,
isn't it mad?
It's incredible, yeah. It's amazing how the industry is just slowly turning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like everyone used to look at the world through a straw.
Yeah.
And how everyone's just getting the broader picture of it.
Well, one thing I really love, Simon, about this whole gamification is I've really become hooked on reading up about NEAT, which is non-exercise activity thermogenesis. Even more so, and I tell a little story in one of my emails. Over Christmas, you know, I took 2 weeks off coaching, had some great time with the family, drank some beers, ate some food, la la la, and I had some great nights out with some fellow trainers because I hadn't had a social life for years since the kids were born. So I thought, sod it. So I jumped on the scales on the 27th, and I wasn't too surprised to see I gained about 6 or 7 pounds. Now, we know it's not real weight, etc., but my nan was quite ill in hospital around about the 27th. So from the 27th onwards, or even I think it's Boxing Day onwards, I didn't have any beer because I was driving. Me and the family were taking it in turns to visit my nan. And I'd had enough beers in December, to be honest. So I went back to doing my training. I was eating better. And normally, you jump on the scales and like within 5 days, that damage is gone. Now, I know we shouldn't always go by the scales because they lie, etc. But I use that as a bit of an indicator during that period of time. Well, I went back to work and I was like, it's not come off as quickly as normal. I've been back in the gym 2 or 3 days coaching. Now, you know what January's like, it's packed, right?
Yeah.
Within that 3 days, bang, straight back to normal. I thought, I haven't done anything different. All I've done is be on my feet. Oh, hang on a second. And I was talking to one of the lads there who's a lecturer at Cardiff University. And he said, yeah, that's because your NEAT's gone up. I was like, what? He said, yeah, that's your NEAT. It's your non-exercise activity thermogenesis, the calories you're expending, just doing your day-to-day stuff. And I remember Renzo, who I wrote, we've written a fantastic program together called the Body Sculpt Blueprint. Renzo Algieri, a great friend of mine, fantastic bodybuilder. He was talking about it to me last year and it just went over my head because he was saying to me, Tregs, you've got to do your cardio, you've got to do your walks, your steady state. And I was like, what the fuck? Who wants to go for a walk, man? You need to hit intervals. And then all of a sudden when this happened and I was like, wow, NEAT. So I started to listen to podcasts solely dedicated to NEAT, and I came across a great one from Lyle McDonald. And he was talking about that actually in certain places in this world, there are demographics of women that are leaner because they're like slaves to their husbands. Right? Whether that's a good or bad, it's obviously a bad thing, but they're washing, they're chasing after the kids, they're cooking, they're clean, they're going out and they're getting the food non-stop, and these ladies are a lot leaner, and that's because their NEAT is up there.
Right.
So
I go on. Sorry.
No, you go on. Jump in.
I was going to say I actually learned this the hard way.
Yeah, go
so,
on.
So with me, obviously, we're an active personal trainer. You're living in the gym.
Yeah.
And then what happened is when Bodycom kicked off and we started traveling all over the place, and I was basically sat behind a laptop. It actually took me for, I didn't realise the effect that had had.
Yep.
Till we were on our retreat and someone took a photo of me and I was like, shit, I never used to look like this.
Right, yeah.
And then it was the same thing, like the lifestyle change.
Yeah. Your training hadn't changed, you just become 50% more inactive because you weren't on your feet. And you see, this is the great thing, Simon, right? It's like, now I look at it and I'm like, so I went deep into looking at this knee and I was like, right, okay, so I got my Fitbit. And actually missed a flight to one of my retreats recently by a couple of minutes. It was just after my nan's funeral, due to fly to Lanzarote. And I just got on my Fitbit. And rather than like fucking cry over spilt milk, I thought, right, I'm going to book a hotel in Bristol, miss the flight in Bristol. I'm just going to go and check in Well, Mrs. has got the kids, they're all taken care of. I'm going to fly up tomorrow. But rather than just laze around and have a beer because I'm pissed off, I'm going to go and explore Bristol and I'm going to do 30,000 steps. I did a live video on Facebook saying I'm going to do 30,000 steps. So I marched around Bristol with my Fitbit and it was great because I left my phone and had my Fitbit on and I was walking around. It was a fantastic day seeing all this different scenery and just people watching. I had a great day, and by the time I got back to the hotel, yeah, my calorie expenditure was over 4,000 combined, you know, with my basal metabolic rate. So, you know, I enjoyed a couple of pints of Guinness guilt-free, but it just made me aware. And what for me is like, I'm looking at all my clients now and they can't lie. It's like Phil Graham said on a recent podcast, look, unless you've got a diagnosed metabolic syndrome, you have not got a slow metabolism. Like, you're just not moving enough or you're eating too much. And I said it to a client the other day who was really struggling, and I said, read this. And I'd written this article in Neat, and she went, oh my God. And I said, you know, sometimes you look at some people, you think, jammy bastard, they stay so lean, but they can eat what they want. Like, chances are they got lots of active hobbies, or they're on their feet all day. And this client said to me, oh my God, I can't get over it. You know, that's why my sister's so lean, because she never sits still. She's on her feet all day. Now I get it. You know, there's not, you know, I know genetics play a part, but there's not one lucky person that can just keep the weight off. These people are active. You can't cheat the law of thermodynamics, right?
Not at all.
What's your thoughts on that?
I think you're correct. I mean, from looking at it, and when we've had people track the steps with their pedometers and stuff along the lines of that, believe it or not, they usually come to around 2,000-4,000 steps per day.
Nothing.
And that's a tiny amount.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, even aiming for the 10,000, that's still, you know what I mean? That's probably just a bit more active.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing as what you were saying. If someone just increases their need by 2,000, 3,000 steps, that one little increment will cross over a huge effect.
Yeah.
And it's exactly with what you were saying. So it's a little thing with a big result.
I think for me, what has changed the game with the whole learning more about the knee is that I can now, I've actually included in the six-week plan, look, guys, as well as your body weight and kettlebell workouts we're going to be giving you, we're going to say to you, get your knee up, and I've explained it in detail. So look, imagine now you're hitting 10,000 steps just 5 days a week. Imagine what that's going to do for you in terms of increased energy expenditure and increased results. And also, let's not forget this, Simon, right? I absolutely have fallen in love with just doing 90-minute power walks now, just to get some fresh air, get some vitamin D, and just be alone with my thoughts.
I was going to go down this route of the whole like disconnect. Mm. You can hit two birds with one stone. So, for example, if your NEAT is rather low, just get yourself out for a walk, put your phone down, and just go and be at one with your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because something else that I find so common is just people aren't in tune with themselves. You don't have enough time in the day to just sit there and go,
yeah,
and just get on track. Yeah. So I think it's a massive thing that's underlooked, is just taking time for yourself and getting clear on you.
I think that's great as well, what you said about, because you can get your knee up and collect your thoughts. It's great. I mean, I work with a lot of people with anxiety and they just can't face going to the gym. And I'm like, look, if you can just go out today, walk with the family, get fresh air, 10,000 steps in, then that is a 2-for-1 almost, because you're going to clear your head, you're going to feel better. I challenge anyone not to go out for a nice 90-minute power walk in the fresh air and not come back in feeling better, feeling reinvigorated. I mean, some days, some weekends, we are in here with the kids and they are absolutely smashing the house up. They're going wild. They're fighting, all that kind of stuff. You go out for, like, we take them down to Barry Island where we are for 3 or 4 hours. Well, straight away their behaviour completely changes because they're out in the fresh air. They're away from television screens or iPads, and they're out in, you know, like I said, in the fresh air. We get out, we get fresh air, we get 20,000 steps in. It's win-win. And do you know, I never thought I'd be saying this 8 to 10 years ago. Go out for a walk, get 10,000 steps in. I'd be like, no, you must do your HIIT. You must do your HIIT. But it's funny how we evolve, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. And the usual excuse that comes up here is that people haven't got enough time to do that. Mm. But the thing is, when people are overwhelmed and anxious and stuff on the lines of that, that 10 minutes of just getting out and being at one with your thoughts and disconnecting, you come back and you're so much more focused and you get more done. Mm. So it works as a great little mental break.
I think as well is that some people go, oh, yeah, but, oh, you know, I need to do more than walking. Well, actually, I never used to walk anywhere. I used to drive or just be, you know, or run. And then I remember when I started to really up my walking, boy, did I ache. Boy, did I know about it. So, guys, if you're listening to this and you're like 20 stone plus, you want to get moving, get yourself a tracker, guys, right? Invest in yourself. Go and get yourself a Fitbit. Hopefully you'll be getting it for affiliate link from 30 plus soon. And get out there, get in a fresh air and get some steps in at a very basic level, you know. What ways can you get your knee up? I already put this in my manual. It's like, look, get off the bus or stop earlier. Walk to work. Walk on your lunch break. You know, get a partner and do this gamification with them. Invite them to daily challenges and try and beat them, you know. Make it fun. It's like Jamie Alderton said on a recent podcast, how can a kid sit on a computer screen and play Call of Duty all day for 13 hours, 14 hours without washing, without brushing his teeth? It's because he's hooked. He's hooked into it. So if we can make exercise fun, we can make it a game, it's going to become that much easier, right, Simon?
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for us, is how do we make everything we do with our clients fun?
Go on.
Because if the fun goes, then that's usually when they lose the process.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your day-to-day training right now out in Spain. And are you tracking, what's your calorie expenditure? What's your nutritional requirements like?
It's ridiculous.
Because I've seen your Instagram stuff, buddy.
So before I actually got my Fitbit, I was eating 3,002.
Really?
So for me, I thought,
still not bad. And what's your stats, Simon? How tall are you? You're a tall fella.
I'm 5'10".
Right, okay.
I was, at the beginning of this, 105 kilos.
Right, okay.
And now I'm at 92. But when I started this training for the set, yeah, it's believe it or not, though, this is where people freak out. Like, the weight's going down, but I actually look, I've still kept the size.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the body composition is changing.
Sure.
Obviously, I've definitely lost a lot of timber.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my weight's definitely coming in. But I seem to be holding around this 92 mark, and my body shape's just, fat's coming down. I'm looking leaner.
Sure.
Week by week now.
So what are you expending? Tell me more about that. Let's get into greater detail.
Let's go into this. So at the beginning of it, I was at 3,002. And this is why I strongly recommend getting something that actually accurately monitors your outtake, or your output, or your energy expense, so to speak. So when I actually started the cycling, I hit a point. So 3 days in of doing it I was only doing an hour a day, so an extra hour per day on a spin bike. I came home, I couldn't sleep, I felt flat, I felt weak in the gym, I felt awful, head was in the clouds. And that was the point where I was like, you know what, I need to get something to actually track this. So I started tracking it, and I actually found that I was burning between 4,002 upwards
a
day.
Wow.
So I was like, I am way under here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my issue is, on Facebook, we did this as a transformation blog as well. So not only am I training for a performance goal, I've been training for my Olympic lifting,
sure,
and then obviously the bike ride.
Right.
So my expense was way up.
Yeah.
So I actually took my food up to meet that, and lo and behold, my body fat dropped a lot better.
Wow.
I started to drop a lot more, and I was eating considerably more. So
why was that then? Tell me a little bit more why that is. That's very interesting.
I was too much in, my body was too far in deficit. So this is why I flattened out.
Interesting. Interesting.
You're more prone to survive, aren't you? That's what your body's key driver is, survival, survival, survival.
Yeah.
And because I was training so much and eating less.
So how much of a deficit do you think you're in? 1,500 calories a day deficit you were in? Or you think that was, or 1,000?
I was around 1,000. I was around 1,000 in deficit. But
and you
I felt
think that
awful.
Was too much for you, yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
Might as well go into Weight Watchers or something.
Sure,
like that.
Sure.
But as soon as I took it up, I felt better. I started to perform better. My actual strength started going up. But like I was trying to say, I was using a lot of these like formulas and calculators that people use online to get that figure of 3,002. But
right,
it was so far off the actual mark.
Yeah.
Because my steps weren't being taken into consideration.
Yeah.
And just little things. And it's like you were saying, the little things make a big difference.
Yeah. I think this is very interesting because, guys, you know, if you are going to track, there's many different equations that you can find on the net. But then it will just ask you, are you sedentary? Are you moving slightly? Are you very active? But then again, how does that know how active we are? So you might put in very active, but you might be doing 25, 30,000 steps a day. That's extremely active. So then it's going to give you an undercalculation almost, isn't it?
Yeah, and the beauty as well is it changes per day. So
yeah,
obviously some days it'll be way up and some days it'll be way down.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for example, yesterday I think I torched up, let's have a look, 5,400 480 I did yesterday. Wow. And that was a four-day 80-mile cycle.
Right.
And I actually, because of that, the amount of food that I needed to get in, I went and took part in a paella.
I saw. Go on, tell us about that, dude.
So I would. Yeah. I jumped in enough because obviously I needed to get, it must have been about 600 grams of carbs in at least. So I thought, there's a paella eating contest. Let's go and do that. So winner.
And you won. Paella pan. So you didn't have to pay?
Of course.
You didn't have to pay? Or?
Basically. No, not at all. So got my name, little frame.
Brilliant. Get a photo. Fantastic, but, dude.
But I wouldn't have known to do that if I wasn't tracking it.
Yeah.
So
you would wholeheartedly recommend a tracker, a Fitbit right now, yeah? Wholeheartedly.
I've been converted. Yeah. I used to be very like, it's just one of these things. But now that I've actually got in there and started using it more, it's actually playing quite an important part in my life, especially at the minute, because each day is different.
Yeah.
So for example, today I'm not training.
Yeah.
So I'm not training. So today I will be eating 3,400. That's
not bad, dude. It's not a bad day. It's not a bad day of eating at all.
But then obviously I need to start building up now because the aim is to get to Valencia. So we've got a 150-mile cycle coming.
Yep.
So now I need to start building. Okay. This is another thing as well. People think you are what you eat on the day, but you're not. You are what you eat over like the duration of 3-4 days. So now I've got to start building my carb amounts up for this big cycle to get in.
So tell me a little bit, because obviously we're going down the road of a bit more of a flexible approach. Tell me a little bit about how you got those calories up. I mean, I know, but the listeners don't know. How fun was that getting the calories up? Tell me where you were getting 4,500 calories in from a day. What does that look like? I know what it looks like.
I've kind of built the reputation as the Cocoa Pops king, I guess. But Cocoa Pops is the short answer. But for me, it's like you were saying, I'm a big advocate. I like nutrient-dense food. I'd always go for the nutrient-dense food over the processed, what comes in a packaged food. However, when I've got 600 to 700 grams of carbs to get in, I can't get that from quinoa, rice, or sweet potato, or else it's just too much. So my high-calorie expense days, that's just little methods I use to get them in.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm all about the nutrients, and especially from a health perspective, and have suffered with a health issue myself. It's all about 80%, 90% of my food intake is from quality, good source foods.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I've had to take a bit of a stint on social media because people just thought I was eating Cocoa Pops.
But then you're training for performance, right? You need energy. You need instant. Yeah.
This is a really good topic. I used to train initially for body composition. That used to be it. Okay. Now, something that I've really realized in this journey over the past year is that from training for performance and actually coming from a performance background, the byproduct is body composition. So I've just had a complete ethos change. I'm getting the same goals and the same results from eating more foods and doing training that I absolutely love.
This is gold.
Stopping myself in splits just wasn't what I enjoyed. And I lost the fun in my training, so I lost my mojo.
Paul Moore recently posted a picky of himself. I keep referring to Paul, but he's a good mate of mine, and he posted a picky of himself, and he's got his six-pack showing, and he's put accidental abs. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, it's the first time I've ever trained without trying to get a six-pack. I've just done stuff I've enjoyed. I've started to box. I'm playing football. I'm doing all this stuff because I enjoy it. And the abs have just come as a byproduct. And I think that is absolutely key. You know, it's absolutely key. Go and do something that you enjoy. And if you want to eat a little bit more, then just increase your output. You know, increase your output. Because, you know, ultimately, it's like Phil Learney said, it's all very well getting on a path. But if that path is taking you down the direction you don't want to go in, then there's just no way you're going to commit to it, you know. So go out there and go and do something that you enjoy. There's many ways to burn calories. Obviously, we want you to lift weights. We want you to use kettlebells in our program. But do not ignore external hobbies, mountain biking, cycling, walking, all those different things, right?
It's fun. Just keep it fun. I mean, from my own experiences of doing photo shoots and stuff along the lines of that, that's what I did. I got onto the wrong path. And this is what I was trying to get at before. Now, the key is, as well, from a psychology point of view, if you've gone so aggressive and so hard and so eliminatory in a diet, and then suddenly, bang, you've hit that wall, it's the after effect.
Yeah.
So if someone's told you not to press a red button, what do you immediately want to do?
Press the red button.
Hit the red button. So it's like, right, sod it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been so strict in the past that, you know, by the time Friday night comes, you might have like one glass of wine. You think, ah, oh, and you're so restricted, then you're just like, oh, and then it's like the chocolate comes out, it's everything. Then you binge. Whereas you could, yeah, like, you're like, now I could just eat a whole nut and I'll be fine. And it's so fucking refreshing to be able to do that. And it does take time, because there's that whole mindset, isn't there, associated, like you said, of you're either on or you're off, you're either on or you're off. But I think what we're really getting across here, guys, is look, make sure that you're creating a deficit that you can handle. Make sure that you're doing something you enjoy. Increasing your output is simple, guys. You know, summer's coming, walk to work, take the bike to work, get off the tube earlier. Okay, just move more and then try and take away that guilt associated with certain foods. Like Simon said here, he's training for a high endurance event and he's been eating Cocoa Pops. Is it optimal? Probably not. Is it going to help him get his calories in? Yes. Is he going to stick to food and whole foods 90% of the time? Yes, he is.
That's the one.
Right. Where do you stand, my good friend, on alcohol? Talk to me about alcohol, because all my clients drink.
I drink.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of BrewDog, and I also love a glass of red wine every Friday, and I'm never going to stop that.
Yeah.
And I presume you have clients who are like, you know what, I enjoy this. This is what I do.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it up. With anything, the devil lies in the dosage, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With anything, be it poor foods or anything. So for me, the big thing for my clients and myself is just to realise where does that dosage become the devil?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just one of those, really. Every Friday night, I'll have a glass of wine with dinner, and or a BrewDog or something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a bad standpoint on it. I do if it gets to a point where it's going against someone's goal and they stop moving forwards because of it. That's when something needs to be stepped in.
Yeah.
And an adjustment needs to be made. But if it's just, do you know what I mean? It's just one of those. If it's a one-off thing, enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. I think
if it's happening every day.
Yeah, it's a different. Yeah, it's like you said, it's in the amount and the dosage. That's something Phil Graham said to me. There's no bad food, it's the amount and the dosage. And what I've done this year, and I think this should be quite hopefully valuable to you guys, is like, I know where my danger areas are. So I've put things in place. So my danger areas in the past where I was having these sort of binge issues is potentially on a Friday night. So I could come home, long week coaching, kids are doing my head in and all that kind of stuff. And I could end up having too much alcohol and too much junk, right? So I'd feel crap on a Saturday and I'd go and coach, all right? We've all felt a little bit crap when we've gone and coached on a Saturday morning. But what I've done now is I do a live video every Saturday, workout train with Tregs. So what it does is it keeps me...
I like that. Keep seeing that.
Thanks very much, mate. It keeps me very honest on a Friday night because I want to wake up and I want to feel great to train you guys at 8 a.m. What I also do then is I never used to going early on a Monday to coach. I used to... because I have management calls. But what I've done now is I've started to go in early, get a couple of hours in early doors and then do my calls, because not only does it give me a good start to the week, but it makes me think about getting to bed early on a Sunday. So my only danger area, but it's not really a danger area now because it's only once a week, is a Saturday evening. So I always, or I have done recently, enjoyed a couple of beers on a Saturday night. And if I do feel a little bit groggy in the morning, I get up and take my son to football. I might do an intermittent fast until I have my Sunday lunch and then just ease back a little bit then. And it's just, it's, if you have areas where you struggle and you think, oh, this could be a danger, put little things in place. Like I said, mine is the training with Tregs on Saturday morning and starting coaching earlier on a Monday. My Saturday night is my Saturday night and I can enjoy that kind of guilt-free and know that I don't have to perform at a high level on a Sunday if I did end up having a few too many. But I think the thing is that when you look at it like that, that's just three beers. What's that? 250 calories a beer, Simon? What are we looking at?
Yeah, roughly about 600.
Yeah, yeah. Not optimal calories. The body's going to try and work hard to get rid of that first, but you can factor those calories in, right?
Yeah, straight away. I mean, there's some things we always look at as well, is look at the mechanisms behind it. So why does that person need to drink?
Yeah.
So for example, is it what need are they trying to meet? Is it a lack of connection? So for example, if people are doing it and it's not necessarily a planned choice, but people are getting home and you know what, sod it, I need a drink. Like, what is the emotion present that's creating that? And I think that's when as well it can become something that's quite negative if it's used as a tool to switch off or if it's used as a tool to sedate or something along the lines of that. Go on, let you carry on.
No, I think that's a very interesting point because I remember when the kids were very young, and I'm openly admit to this, and I know my missus as well, like I used to you know, have a couple of beers on a weekend. I wouldn't go out uptown or to the pub or anything because I'd be in with the kids, but I'd have a few beers in the house to take the sting out of the sheer brutality of having two young kids that were just shitting and being sick and, yeah, just turning our lives upside down. And it was an escapism. Now they're a little bit older. Like, look, don't get me wrong, having two kids, anyone listening to this, is really hard. It's chaos. But they're at an age now where it's not so much of a shitty conveyor belt and sicky conveyor belt, and they do sleep. So my beers on a Saturday night is purely for relaxation. You know, I might have a long afternoon. We had coach in the morning, long afternoon out on a Saturday afternoon with the family down on Barry Island. We always have some chips at the end of it once we've clocked up 20,000 steps because we've earned them. And then I might have a couple of beers, but it's purely for relaxation. And I understand that, no, whereas before it was escapism and now it's relaxation. And a lot of that is down to the fact my kids are a bit older and I have this sort of CBT and things like that. But I think you're very right there, Simon. It's like, why are you drinking? Why are you drinking midweek? Why are you drinking every night midweek? What's that about? Is it to relax or are you trying to escape something?
Yeah, I think that plays a big part in it. And I think you've just hit the nail on the head as well with what you said. Is that, do you know what I mean? That you're not using it as, it's more of a like a relaxation thing because you're doing it for yourself. Mm. And I think a lot of people, what they do is they'll go out and they'll have a drink and they perceive it as bad. And they'll beat themselves up about it for ages. And they don't just actually like, oh, do you know what? This happened. I can do this. And this is my battle strategy around it. Mm. So I think as long as you've got, if you know something's going to go a bit tits up, as long as you've got a way around it to make things meet, I think you're fine. And as well, a lot of people sit in their own shit. So a lot of people go out and get hammered. And then the next day, they just don't do anything. They'll sit in the bed or sit in front of the TV and feel sorry for themselves. Instead, like, do you know what? Just get up, get yourself back into your emotions, yeah. Go for a walk, and yeah. Then suddenly you're back up again.
I think this is great because, again, it's like, you know, we're not encouraging people to go out for a session, but even if you went out and said you said you had 7 or 8 pints, I mean, again, not optimal, but I always say what is optimal when you're working with the demographic of guys I am. You know, if you did get up the next day and go, you know what, fuck it, I'm feeling rough, but rather than go for a fry up, I'm going to have 2 litres of water, I'm going to go for a long walk, get 10,000 steps in. And maybe just have a Sunday lunch and then that's it, get early to bed. You would have offset that. Chances are you're going to wake up on Monday probably feeling back to normal. But whereas most people, like you said, they sit in their own shit. I like that. Yeah. And that hangover carries on into Monday when they're miserable and they're craving shit. And then it sets them up for a bad week, right?
Yeah. Massive. I mean, for me, I used to notice when I was doing it, Wednesday. I used to notice Wednesday was my day. It used to have a knock-on effect. Like my energy and everything was really low.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know what? If I'm drinking way too much at the weekend and it's having an effect for me for these 4 days, this needs to change because I'm being unproductive. I'm not feeling myself. I'm not showing up like high in energy.
Yeah.
So that for me was where I was trying to say about the devil in the dosage.
Yeah.
If you can realize where that point is, where you can wake up, get up and you're not sitting in your own shit as to where you're waking up feeling a bit hungover.
The devil in the dosage. I like that.
I think that's actually a Phil Graham quote. I think that's the man who I heard that one from. So I'll give him the credit on that one.
Brilliant. Okay, we good? We've been talking now for 1 hour and 8 minutes. This is great. It just feels like we've only just met, but we're doing all right. So I think we'll probably have a second date, Simon, to be honest. All right. I want to... Are you cool to carry on, yeah?
I've got all the time.
Great stuff, mate. Okay, I'm really enjoying this. Guys, I hope you get some good value from it. Okay, I want to switch track slightly, Simon. I want to talk about mindset and self-development. A lot of guys now in my programs are popping up and saying, which good books are there to read on mindset? I want to really start self-development. Where do I start? And I've often said, and people might think it's woo-woo and all that, but there was a book that changed my life called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. That sparked me into action. It got me visualizing what I wanted to achieve, and those dreams came true. You know, I visualized becoming a successful personal trainer, and that's happened. But it wasn't just sat there, you know, in my pants visualizing. It was actually taking action. And that led me to go on multiple courses, mindset courses. I went and saw Bob Proctor in the States 2 years ago, which was a fantastic course. It made me set some massive goals, which we're working towards now. And you know, I look over on my desk there, I've got things like Think and Grow Rich, I've got Cybernetics, I've got what have I got? Working with the Law, all these things, mindset books. I'm very much into it. What have you done in terms of mindset? Are you spiritual? Are you very much into self-development? Because I think you probably are, mate, with the business that you're growing. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, I am, especially from my own little downfall when I had my own little black patch. That was kind of the thing that made me get on track, and it really opened my eyes to it. Mm. Was I going through my own kind of like development through it all, really. In terms of book, there's a good book called Conversations with God. It's not religious at all, however a lot of people think it is. That's definitely one book which I've read, which is all about holding you accountable. Like every choice in life is because of you,
right?
Which I think is huge. It's just taking accountability for your own mess, your own actions, the positions you're in, the relationship you could be in but you didn't take the action to go and speak to the girl. So I think it's a really, really great book from that point of view, from the accountability and reclaiming things.
Right.
As a Man Thinketh is a great book. If you've read that, some good little stories in that. That's a very thin, quick read, which is a really, really good one. And the ethos in that is a man's either made in his thoughts or broken in his thoughts.
Yep.
And that's a good book. The actual book called Mindset, there's a really, really good book called Mindset. I always revisit that one. That one's a big one.
Yep.
And then to be honest, it's one of those, anything's human needs based. So anything that's around the human needs, and I know a lot of people either like him or don't like him, but Tony Robbins' stuff on the human needs is absolutely solid. And I think from a coaching perspective, if you can realize why people do what they do, you can drastically impact that person's life. If you can realize that they're eating shit because they've got no connection in their life, or they're drinking all the time or doing drugs to feel connected, then that's what needs to be worked on. Yeah. I think they're the biggest ones for me personally. I'm trying to think if there's any others that I've gone down. You read so much, don't you, that you can't remember what you've been through. Yeah. Psycho-Cybernetics is a great one because that one's all about you can't just put a sticker over the wound. You've actually got to address the wound, which I really like. Yeah. So yeah, it's probably the same sort of stuff as yourself, to be honest.
I think as well as guys, I mean, a lot of you guys that have got kids like me, you probably, you've got loads of books on the desk. I've got Gary Vaynerchuk's latest one. There's just nowhere I can open it at the minute because it's just mental with the kids. I mean, even when I'm sat on the toilet, they come running in. But half the time I'm perving at Instagram when I'm sat there. So... But
no comment.
Yeah, I'm watching your Cocoa Pops videos, mate. But listen to podcasts like you're listening now. Download audiobooks, guys. Because look, if we're encouraging you to go out and get your knee up, which is gonna give you some nice fresh air, so mentally it's gonna be stimulating for you, and also increase your output. Why not listen to an audiobook or something like that? I know Jamie Alderton said things really started to change for him when he started to go for power walks in the morning. Just listen to podcasts. And I know, simply from doing two podcasts a month since the start of the new year, I'm getting so much more. My life is improving, honestly, because I'm getting guys like yourself on that are giving me so much value, giving me so many nuggets to pass on to my clients that I'm rewriting programs, you know? So guys, self-development-wise, just even if you just stick it, get something on Audible, get something you can listen to in your headphones when you're going for a walk, and start to make sort of daily sort of action steps. I want to talk to you about that. Are there daily sort of action steps, daily habits that you use, Simon, to set you up to win?
Yes, 110,000,000%. For me, I always notice if my daily routine fails, it's usually because something that I do in the mornings failed. So for me, as soon as I get up, pretty much it's my time. The reason that I do this is because if I open my emails or kind of like start looking into other people's life first thing in the morning, I'm not living in my own.
Yeah.
So for me, there's no social media. I won't go on my emails till 10 a.m.
I like that.
And it's just a simple case of looking after my own stuff. So I'll spend an hour educating myself, reading a book. I'll go and do a podcast. So just skipping back a note with you and Jamie as well. Podcasts are absolutely amazing. If you actually look there and do a time diary as to how much time you spend in a car, walking, commuting, it's massive.
100%.
Especially when you actually realize that if you invest half an hour, I think it's half an hour into yourself every day, at the end of the year, it's 2 weeks. So you've totted up 2 weeks. Yeah.
Whoa, now, if you guys, there's a nugget there, guys. There's a real nugget there.
If you can actually imagine that, if you wake up half an hour earlier, you're suddenly gaining an extra two weeks of life to work on something, be it a business, be it on something. So that was a real stepping point for me, was actually getting really anal on my time. And instead of wasting it frittering away on Facebook and stuff along the lines of that, I'll just go on these when I need and stop. And as well, just not living in other people's lives or pockets. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I'll focus on my stuff and then I'll get off.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big thing with social media. But anyway, back to the initial topic was habits. So first thing in the morning, it's all about me. I'll wake up, I'll go walk, I'll educate. So for me, the first thing that I do is actually just work on myself. Straight after that, I'll spend 10, 15 minutes just getting clarity. So I'll just sit there, be at one with my thoughts. I'll reflect. What happened yesterday? Was there resistance in any of my actions? If there was, why? Was there an emotion present which I didn't deal with? I'll work out what was here. And then what I'll do is I'll start planning the day. So I'll set myself up and I'll work out exactly at what times what I'm necessarily doing. We're all working people. We know damn well that that doesn't happen 80% of the time, and the majority of the time you it's quite hard to stick to a day, but I'll try and stick to it as much as possible. And then what I'll do is I'll set the day up for one goal. Now, somewhere where I see a lot of people struggling, especially in the business and entrepreneurial realm, is they'll set the day up with a million different goals and they won't get any done.
Right.
So for me, if, for example, on a Wednesday, it's networking. I will just on a Wednesday try and reach out to as long as it's one person. But I'll, you know what I mean? So each day's got its own designated goal. And right. I know if I'm just making that small increment of movement forwards, then everything else is moving forward.
Yeah.
What else do I do first thing in the morning?
Are you into
That's
your
pretty much it, really.
Are you into your power walks and fasted cardio or anything like that? Or I suppose you're doing so much cycling at the minute, aren't you?
Well, first thing in the morning, I've actually got into Olympic lifting. So I actually go and do technical work first thing in the morning. So for me, I actually get up and move. And I've actually found I'm so much better performing first thing in the morning, just either on proteins and fats or fasted, than when I am in the evening from carbs. So for me, it's massive. And that really fires me up because it's all nervous system based. I'm on fire. Brilliant. As soon as I come back and I'm, do you know what I mean?
Just this is really interesting, Simon. I'll jump in there because a lot of people always say to me, what's the best time to train? Should I eat before? Should I eat? And I just say, you know what? Go by how you feel. There's no right or wrong. Like you said there, I love to train fasted on maybe just fats and proteins. I love training fasted. I love it. But I've been with other people to the gym. I can't do it. Can't train fasted. Can't do it. All right, I'll train in a fed state later on. You know, you've got to go by feel. Always go by feel. How did you feel this morning training? Okay, had you eaten? Were you fasted? Okay, great. That works. Yeah, it doesn't. So, yeah, really interesting. You love to train fasted with Olympic lifting first thing in the morning. So it's not easy stuff. That's very demanding on the central nervous system.
Yeah, but I think it's because I eat so much at night, it carries over. Do you know what I mean?
Topped up, bro.
For me, you just hit a huge nail on the head is listen to your body. Like, everyone's always looking for an answer or for someone to give them the answer, but your body will tell you. It's like, you performed really well here. This is a good time for you to train. And I mean, like, for example, I got so much cross information, like with Olympic lifting and fasted training being the wrong thing and that it was negative and that you'd eat away at muscle and all that
catabolic
sort of stuff.
Bro.
I was actually scared of training in the morning and fasted. But then I just, you know what, I thought, sorry, put my ego aside, I'll try it. And it's been the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, I wake up, get to the gym, lift some heavy shit, throw some objects around.
Yeah.
And I'm back. I'm on fire.
And then start eating. Brilliant stuff, buddy.
Pretty much, yeah. Begins the feast. So, because for me at the minute, it's as well, I'm trying to go against the grain. So I've picked up an endurance goal because I don't like endurance, but I've begun to love it. And I'm trying to get the whole grain of that you can still train for strength, still hold your muscle mass, but yet still perform at an endurance sport. Because I find that everyone just picks one thing and aims for it.
Dude, I love
when
it.
In fact, you can have like a multitude.
Well,
that's what I'm trying to do at the minute, is just show people that it's doable. Like, well, I'm the strongest I've ever been.
Yeah.
I'm doing 80 miles on a bike and I'm fucking loving it.
Yeah, you're looking pretty lean in your pics, dude, on Instagram. And, you know, this is really interesting, right? Because I was training last year with my mentor, Renzo. Like, we wrote this awesome program together called the Body Sculpt Blueprint. And I went solely down the road of lifting weights. And he kept saying to me, Tregs, don't ignore your cardio. You've got to do your walk. You've got to do your list. You've got to do your steady state. And then I was just like, oh, I can't be asked. Can't be asked. And then all of a sudden, it was on my birthday at boot camp. I finished taking a class and they said, right, Treg's going to have to do a Facebook Live. You've got to do 38 burpees, right? Now, I used to whack out like 100 burpees and no problem and all that kind of thing. They put a live on me and I was doing these burpees and I thought I was going to die. And I got home, my missus was like, you okay? You look like you're really struggling. And I was like, shit, I have lost all fitness. Like, I've lost it. And we're going back like years ago, I do 10Ks in like 38 minutes and half marathons, 1 hour 24. I was like, right, I don't want to sacrifice lifting weights every day because I'm loving it. But I also don't want to be unfit. So that's when I actually started to do more of the walking, the power walking, because at the time I just wasn't fit enough to start like running 5 and 10Ks again. So I got my Fitbit. And then what that's done now is it's actually led on to me, not just power walking, but also running. and I'm doing a half marathon in a couple of weeks, first one in years, and sign up for Europe's Toughest Mudder. But I'm still doing weights as well, and I'm just really fucking enjoying it. I'm just enjoying doing a bit of everything. And it's like a lot of lads are popping up in the groups now going, oh, I don't know about this, don't know about that. And I go, do you know what? Just do what you enjoy. I'm lifting weights and enjoying it. I'm walking, I'm running. And it's great.
And that's what it is. You find what you enjoy and you just go and fucking do it. I spent 2 years off my path, starving myself, doing splits, like training one muscle a day. And it was laborious, monotonous, and it drove me into the floor. So that's it. Enjoy it. And if there's at one point when you're like, you know what, I don't actually enjoy this, change it.
Change
it.
So just quite interesting, you're training for this endurance event. Would you say you're holding muscle at the minute?
I'm not on my stats at the minute. I have dropped a little bit, don't get me wrong. So it has been a little bit of mitigation, but that's from me just not being on it with my nutrition.
Sure.
So this is what it is at the minute. This is the beauty of the tracking. I can now get... My body composition's changing way for the better.
Right.
This is what I was trying to say before, is that the byproduct of me doing what I'm doing and tracking to the extent that I'm tracking is that I'm actually holding the majority of my composition, and it's all coming from fat.
Right. So what scales are you using to track your body fat and things like that? What is it linked up to your Fitbit? What have you got, buddy?
At the minute, I've got the Fitbit on. I've got, obviously, iPhone tracking, nutrition stuff on the lines of that. I'm obviously doing your weight, your measures, body fat, skin folds.
You're doing skin folds, right, okay.
Yeah, I did get a DEXA scan. I'm really excited to see that because, obviously, it's the most accurate form of tracking. But from the way that I'm feeling and the way that I'm looking, if I just put photo next to photo, my frame is still the same. But obviously it's just the compositional aspect starting to change.
Right.
I think as well, because of the way that I've been training with regards to my training, switched towards strength and performance in the morning, obviously the muscle's not swelling and it's not as bulbous, and now the stimulus is more dense.
Right.
I think that might be having some form of an impact. But like I said, it's a bit of a full month.
And the mirror never lies, does it? As Renzo told me, he said, look, I say to him, what did you weigh when you went on stage? And he said, look, they're not looking for that. All they want to know is, are you shredded or are you in shape? And he said, you know, looking in the mirror for 30 years of weight training, the mirror's never lied. And I think the mirror's not going to lie, is it?
No, not at all. But again, on this note, I personally feel for me, this is where the industry's kind of lost itself. Now, this is where everyone's focusing on is aesthetics. So it's either the scales or the way that people are looking. And I mean, I had someone come to me the other day and I was like, can you actually look yourself in the mirror, this female? And this female, we'll call her Audrey. She's not going to label. This lady came to me and I just said to her, I was like, can you actually look yourself in the mirror? And can you say that you like yourself and you love yourself? And she's like, oh no, I can't do that. And I was like, so really, are you in your head at the minute thinking that as soon as you get lean and as soon as you can see your stomach muscles, that you're going to like yourself and you're going to love yourself? And she went, oh, no. And I was like, the goal isn't the way that you look then, is it? You need to work on yourself.
Yeah, I like it.
I think that's where a lot of people are getting confused. They're attaching the goals of happiness and the goals of fulfillment to a six-pack.
Being shredded,
And I can tell you now from my own experience, that ain't going to fucking happen.
No. Yeah. Well, Renzo said to me, he said, look, we might look great when we go on stage, but we feel like absolute shit. And you can't hold that condition for much longer than the time you're on stage.
No.
Because it ain't healthy.
And as well, when you're at that mark, I think this again was Phil Graham, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was Phil or Jamie or one of those guys or Phil Learney. No, it was Phil Learney actually. Said that the moment you are at your leanest is the moment for life you are at your fattest. You committed to that because you're always comparing to where you were at that photo shoot.
Sure.
And I mean, that's somewhere I caught myself in the trap. I was like, oh, I need to be this lean. This is where I got to. And it's like, yeah, but what did I actually do to get there?
Yeah.
So,
and what was life like when you were there? Restrictive or?
Oh, yeah. I probably could have cried.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good place. No. It wasn't a good place. It was restricted. Like I said, you know what it is. It's the usual thing.
Okay, buddy. We have been talking now for almost an hour and a half. So we're going to wrap up in about 5 to 7 minutes, but not before we talk about something that I've seen you recently get involved in, which looks really exciting. And you're doing some affiliation with a adventure obstacle race company. Tell us more about that, dude.
So Born Survivor, we are now the affiliate coaching company for these guys. So
wow, how did that come about, dude?
It's amazing what we bring into the table, really. So obviously, a lot of people don't really have goals to train for, and a lot of people jump into these obstacle runs. Now, what we're trying to do is take people from the couch to Born Survivor. So right. We're setting up like three different levels. So we're going to have an elite one for people who want to go out there and go balls to the walls. We're going to have ones like a coaching segment for people that just want to do it and get through it. And then obviously people that want to do the whole transformation and work towards it. So the key is there. We're helping people get through nutritionally, performance-wise, and just giving people something fun and enjoyable to train towards.
So basically people sign up for Born Survivor and then they get the option of, would you like a training plan, basically, yeah? And then they come to you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, at the minute, we're still in the processes of building everything, so there's no definites. But we've just got a group, and we've got, at the minute, I nearly ended up getting bloody locked up for this. Here's a really fun story, actually. Yeah. So we set up an event. So I was like, oh, we've got a load of people, and we'll go and do a hill sprint thing to train for it. And this is how it all started. Now, we only thought we'd end up with like 40 people, but we nearly got like 300 people that wanted to come to this event. So obviously United Utilities sent us through this huge, forwardation to prosecution or something like
really?
That. So we've got this legal letter saying, yep, we're going to have to move your event. That's how all that started, was we just get, because for me, it's all about building communities and getting out there and connecting with people. And that's what I love about it, and helping people. So I wanted to create this event where we just brought people from everywhere to come and do these events. And they saw us doing it, and that's what's kind of
brilliant.
Led it.
Brilliant. So where does this lead on to, where do you see yourself going now in the future, Simon? You said you're 28, 29, right? So what is the long-term plan for yourself with body composition? And you personally, I mean, what's your personal fitness goals? I know what you're doing this year, but beyond.
I'll go into this. So for me personally, my goal for next year is I want to serve 1 million people. So I'd like to have impacted 1 million people and actually been there and changed 1 million people's lives. Be that through, like I'm trying to say, the whole embodiment of it and not just giving someone a nutrition plan.
Yeah.
Like for me, the big important stuff that I love and I get that my passion is in is seeing someone that came to us just to change something but has ended up following this career and is...
Yeah.
For example, here's a really good story. So for example, we got a lady come through, hated a job, hated everything. And like I was trying to say about the permission slip to change your body was a permission slip to change other things. She's now actually created her own businesses and is now actually stepping up as the UK's number one sex coach. And she is doing so, so well. But this is what I was trying to say. That for me is...
Niche, baby. That's niche, yeah.
So gaining the confidence, gaining the energy, and more to the point, gaining the belief and finding your purpose for being on this planet and following that. Yeah. So for me, that's the real important thing here is doing that. So goals-wise with body comp is for us to, by next year, serve 1 million people. So the key is with that, we're going to start doing events. We've got our podcast going live, which obviously here's my invite for you to come on it.
I'd love to, mate.
So
love
if you come on it. With retreats, so we've got retreats that have proven really successful now. So we've got those Bali, Marbella, Cyprus, all over the show, Spain. And it's just kind of bringing everything together, creating a community. And it's similar to what you're doing with your 50 Men's Plus. It's building a community that people feel safe, tribe, and...
What kind of events are they going to be, Simon? Because obviously I've set a goal for 1 million as well, so I'm just being nosy now, right? I want to know your strategy for what kind of events are you going to be doing to bring people together? The adventure races, yeah?
With regards to, it's pretty much everything. The adventure races, yeah, but I'm on about actually serving 1 million people, not just stepping out in front of, but actually getting 1 million people to come through and really drastically change their lives.
Yeah.
So, for example, with seminars and stuff along the lines of that, I don't just want to give people nutrition advice. I want to give them something that makes them go away and, you know what, and think, do you know what? I can live a better life than what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then do that. So
you're going to do sort of public speaking and things like that as well, yeah?
For me, my passion really lies in public speaking and media. So I love being up there. I love doing stuff like this, getting out there and talking to people.
Yeah.
Just little things that I enjoy doing. And now that we've got the team around us, it just makes life a hell of a lot easier.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's something I would definitely like to look at in the future, because, I mean, I think we've got a great story with Whole 30 Plus Men's Fitness and what we're doing.
Yeah,
so there might be some synergy there along the way, brother. You know, it's how all great relationships start. So in terms of physically for you, you've got your cycle coming up, but beyond that, you're beyond that, because you're a young dude, man. You're not even 30 yet.
I want to get this cycle over the way with, and then I've got a few, like, obviously the beginning of last year, what kind of hit things off was with the Inca Trail. So me and Pat Neville went and did the Inca Trails up in Peru, which was amazing.
Amazing guy, Pat. Amazing guy. Great friend of mine.
Very inspiring guy as well. Really, really inspiring guy. But I've got some stuff along the lines of that, like doing the base camps, Kilimanjaro. I just like doing different stuff and going against the grain. And that for me is the big thing, and showing people that there's more to life than just transforming yourself in a gym.
Yeah, yeah. Set challenges, right? Set big challenges. I'm often saying this to a lot of my clients now that, you know, 30 plus, saying, look, you need challenges. You have to absolutely have challenges. Otherwise, you just get stale. And it's something that, you know, big challenges, big goals is something that I probably want to do more now. Never, my nan passed away in January, and I just thought to myself, you know what? She had a great life. She passed away at 82, but it was quite sudden. And I just thought to myself, this is year I want to get out there. I just want to get out there, challenge myself more for not just physically but mentally. And that was one of the reasons I signed up for Europe's Toughest Mudder, because it's through the night. It's 8 hours. You know,
how long is it? What's the?
It's 8 hours. You just keep running and you just keep doing multiple laps of the course in the dark.
I could jump on.
Come and
you?
Jump on. More than welcome. I'll give you all the details when we finish recording. But
yeah, you said. Yeah, I don't mind doing that.
I haven't. You know, the most thing I ran up until the last 7 weeks was a bath for my kids. Like, you know, so I thought, right, this is a big challenge. But I know it's in me. I know it's in me. It's not like I know I can't do it. But I just got to put the training in. And I've got a couple of clients that are doing it now. They're getting out. They're doing night runs, and I'm gonna like get myself a little headlamp and start getting out and doing night runs. I just want to get out there more this year and just have more adventure. You know, I've got two little boys that they need to be out in the fresh air. That's why we took them on a skiing holiday, and just they need activity, you know, camping, getting out there, getting in the woods and just things like that. Yeah. That's what I want to do this year. And sort of say to my clients, get signed up for races, get signed up for Tough Mudder, get signed up for a bike ride, get signed up for a sponsored fucking walk.
Yeah, that's what we're here for, aren't we?
Yeah.
Just to do new stuff, adventure, and see new bits of the world. That's all we're here for, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Meet new people and do new stuff.
Absolutely, bud. Okay. Wow. We've been chatting for like 90 minutes, dude. It's been amazing. I've promised the missus I'm going to take one of the kids. Well, no, I want to take him out as well, but hang on. Got you on the thing now. It has been a real pleasure, mate. Because obviously, I always say to the guys, you know, when I get these guests on, I've just reached out to you and you've said yes and decided to come on. And it's great because we spoke for 5 minutes off camera and then just got into it. And it's been great fun, Simon. So
I just do one little thing?
Of course you can.
Can I just flip a question to you? I always ask people this.
Yeah, I love it.
It is. If you follow my Instagram stories, I always get people to do this. And just say, what is your one tip for a successful, happy life that you would give to anyone?
Ooh, one tip.
One quick bullet point tip, yeah. One golden tip.
One tip for a successful, happy life. Well, that's easy. Be very grateful. Be grateful for everything you have, but keep striving.
I love that. That one's not come up on here yet.
All right, buddy. Brilliant.
I get that one.
Yeah, brilliant. Simon, what we're going to talk now when we finish, we'll have a little bit of a roundup, buddy, and be good to meet up sometime when you're home. Where are you based, out of interest?
Anywhere.
I love it.
Wherever needs me these days.
Yeah.
Seriously. That's another story in itself.
Really?
Usually around the Manchester area.
Yeah. Oh, great. It's an excuse for me to go to Old Trafford and watch a game then. Brilliant, mate. Brilliant. All right. Well, look, dude, it's been an absolute pleasure. Tell the people of listening to the 30 Plus podcast where they can find you. Pimp yourself out. Instagram, Snapchat. Tell us where they can find you.
Instagram, Simon Hall BC, Twitter, Simon Hall BC, Snapchat, Simon Hall 2, and Facebook, Simon Hall. So pretty much just anything's my name.
Yep.
It should come up. And over on the website, which is bodycomcoaching.com.
Yeah, we'll put all your links in there for you, dude, anyway. So what I'll do is I'll get this sent off to my tech guy, Carl. He's going to add some cool jingles and test all the sound. We'll get this out to the crew tomorrow. That'll be the 28th February, because I promised 2 a month. And we'll run a few sponsored ads and get it out to the list. And hopefully they will get some great value. So Simon Hall, thanks again for coming on, dude. Please stay on the line afterwards once I stop recording.
Thanks for having
and we'll,
me.
We'll have a little bit of banter, mate. So guys, hope you get some value from this. Please remember to go to iTunes or Podomatic. Give us a like, give us a share. Just help us spread this 30 plus message, guys. We want to try and take the global community up to around about 10,000, guys. Keep spreading the message what we're doing. We're trying to get busy over 30s guys off the couch, get them moving, become a better version of themselves, have more energy, and ultimately be able to run around with the kids. If you can't run around with the kids, then what's the point, guys? All right. So really hope you enjoyed this. New 6-week plan is open. You'll get everything via your email when you get this podcast. So guys, it's been Coach Treggs. It's been Simon Hall. Saying goodbye. We'll keep trucking, lads. Take care.